Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded.
Welcome back on the podcast, Harriet.
Thanks for having me again.
As we usually start off, why not start about some self-care that you've done over the past week?
Over the past week, I have gotten my nails done. So I went for bright red this week, which is fun. So engaging in those acts of self-care can definitely look like going to the nail salon, as well as just doing my exercise and having my coffee and my walks. So yeah, a variety of different things this week.
Well, I am loving that you always have more self-care to talk about, which is good. So on the topic of today, we are speaking about starvation syndrome. So something that's quite associated with starvation syndrome is the Minnesota starvation experiment. Would you be able to talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, sure. So it's important to flag firstly that this experiment conducted by the University of Minnesota during 1944 to 1945, it wouldn't really be ethical at present due to the different experimental conditions. But what did the study involve? Well, we've got participants who were fit young male volunteers who did not present with any symptoms of an eating disorder. And these participants were subject to three different conditions. For the first 3 months, they ate normally, eating an amount that was optimal for their daily physical, emotional, and cognitive functioning. And then for the next 6 months, their caloric intake dropped by about 50%, consequently resulting in a reduction of, on average, 25% of baseline body weight. And then during the three-month recovery phase, which followed, participants returned to having a more adequate caloric intake, reflective of what they were eating initially in condition one, and reflective of you know, what they needed in order to kind of facilitate that weight restoration. So the goal of the study was to explore the physical and psychological consequences of dietary restriction and the extent to which dietary rehabilitation strategies like refeeding were effective in restoring participants back to physical and psychological health. And there were numerous physical and psychological effects that were evident when participants were semi-starved.
So what is starvation syndrome, and what are some of the signs and symptoms of starvation syndrome?
Okay, so when an individual is starved of energy, so like the participants in the Minnesota starvation experiment, and they're not consuming sufficient calories, the body goes into what we call starvation syndrome, which refers to the many physical and psychological effects of prolonged dietary restriction. These effects were first observed in the participants in the Minnesota experiment. And these effects are often observed in individuals at present who do present with a restrictive eating disorder, such as anorexia nervosa. So there are many signs and symptoms of starvation syndrome. And we see, firstly, physical changes like lower metabolic rate, changes in heart rate, decreased body temperature, hair loss, reduced muscle mass, hormonal changes such as reduced sex hormones like estrogen and progesterone, and increased stress hormones such as cortisol. And the change in these hormonal levels can actually bring about adverse effects on bone strength and lead to various bone conditions. Other physical effects could look like dry dry skin, as well as just reduced energy and motivation for daily activities. Emotionally, we see mood fluctuations, increased irritability, greater stress and anxiety, lower mood. Cognitively, we can observe impaired concentration and memory, as well as increased rigidness and obsessiveness in thinking, generally around food-related practices and body practices, such as body checking and body avoidance. Socially, we can observe stunted interpersonal development, reduced interpersonal engagement, as well as interpersonal disputes and deficits. And social isolation and withdrawal from social situations is also often experienced by that individual too. Regarding eating and body image related behaviors and cognitions, we can observe preoccupation with body weight and shape, greater control over food and eating, stronger food related cognitions, and stricter rules around what and how much the individual can eat, as well as increased engagement in restrictive dieting, binge eating, and purging behaviors.
So then how can all areas of someone's life be impacted by starvation syndrome?
Okay, so we'll sort of dissect each area briefly. So socially, first, interpersonal relationships can suffer due to a potential disengagement with others and reduced time in social settings and networking. And this degree of withdrawal and isolation, which we often see in those with starvation syndrome, usually comes about due to decreased energy, lack of motivation, as well as mood changes and a preoccupation with body weight and shape, as well as control over food and self-image. In terms of intimate relationships, a hyper-focus on self-image can lead to body dissatisfaction, preoccupation with, this weight shape, over-evaluation of weight and shape, which can lead to body avoidance. And this lack of intimacy, which can often result with this hyper focus on self-image, can negatively impact relationships and hinder the development of intimate connections. Self-development, when we're looking at that domain, like self-care activities are often neglected, again, due to this preoccupation with other things, like body image, food, and the rigid rules around that, in addition to reduced interpersonal engagement and mood-related factors. So like a disinterest in activities once enjoyed, decreased energy, increased anxiety and irritability, impaired concentration, and low mood. With regards to the study, school, work domain, starvation syndrome may impair work performance due to those changes in executive functioning in the brain. So poorer concentration, low energy, reduced mental control, reduced memory, issues with perceptual reasoning and processing speed, as well as, again, this hyper-focus on food and body image related things. And this may leave that individual with less time to focus on enhancing academic and occupational performance as their attention is directed to other matters.
You might also not really have the energy to engage cognitively with people or in activities, like you were saying, but you also might faint or be dizzy, or it just might be hard to do things if you're in starvation syndrome.
Definitely. So the reduced energy, as well as feeling dizzy, and people have been known to faint and have those sorts of reactions, which can definitely mean that they have to be removed from certain personal situations in order to get back on track and to recover.
Definitely. So then how does a significant calorie deficit from dieting play a role in starvation syndrome symptoms?
Well, when an individual is in a significant calorie deficit, they're not receiving sufficient energy. So this lack of energy means that, their bodies cannot function optimally. And this gives rise to symptoms of starvation syndrome. calories and the energy that it provides us. Well, I mean, those calories and the energy provide us with the nutrients, right, to go about our daily activities. So in the absence of receiving adequate energy, we cannot do this to the best of our ability. Like, we cannot engage in the things that we need to. And in our society, calories are often seen and talked about in a negative light. For example, diet culture tells us to pick foods low in calories as a weight control strategy. However, calories are important fuel for the body. So we need to get an adequate amount of them based on our individual needs.
And you also might need different amounts of calories each day. Like, you might need more one day, but less the next.
Definitely. And yeah, it definitely changes from day to day based on, you know, what we're doing.
So then how is brain activity affected by restrictive eating, malnourishment, and excessive weight loss?
The brain functions optimally when we're receiving sufficient energy. So without the nutrients to facilitate this optimal functioning, our executive and that emotional functioning is negatively impacted, and this can result in, as flagged above, impaired memory and concentration, poor verbal comprehension, poor perceptual reasoning, slower processing speed, as well as mood fluctuations. So increased irritability, anger potentially, low mood, and increased anxiety. Our focus can often narrow as well, leaving us with little else to think about besides that food, eating, dietary rules, weight and shape, and the need to control this. And one of the reasons why our brain may focus our attention on food when we are experiencing starvation syndrome is because we are just simply undernourished. Our body likely perceives us to be going through some sort of famine, and so it wants us to be hyper-focused on food, I guess, in attempts to drive us toward food that is needed for our survival.
And being in that state also would be quite hard for people to constantly be in that type of state.
Definitely.
So then how might this skew perceptions of reality?
Reality may become skewed if we are experiencing starvation syndrome due to our impaired cognitive functioning. So we may process information, say, in a biased way. And this could look like attending only to certain pieces of information that confirm our beliefs. And we often call this attention processing bias. So, for example, if we believe we will have a bad day or we're clumsy, we will find things in our world that confirms that we're having a bad day or that we are clumsy, and not attend to pieces of information that actually would disconfirm that belief. With regards to body image, those who are malnourished will often report body image dissatisfaction and a hyper awareness of their body, as well as distorted perception of their body. They may exaggerate parts of their body which they do not like and overestimate, you know, the size of other parts of their body. And due to this energy deficit, they may lack the cognitive capacity to be able to challenge these skewed and false perceptions.
Definitely. So then also, why does a person not have to be underweight necessarily to show symptoms of starvation syndrome?
For some people, they engage in restrictive dieting and will experience symptoms of starvation syndrome despite not being underweight. And this is generally the case for those with, say, atypical anorexia, where symptoms of anorexia nervosa are met, such as restrictive intake, preoccupation with weight shape, with the exception of say, dramatic weight loss. So a possible hypothesis for this could be that, you know, when our body is starved, our metabolism slows down, and sometimes our body will fight really hard against using up, say, fat stores, and this is a survival and protective mechanism. the body may perceive it to be going through a famine, and so will work extra hard to preserve this fat in case it needs to be utilized in the future. So they'll do all it can to preserve it as opposed to utilizing it for energy. But it's hard to answer that, and I'm not entirely sure, but that's just a hypothesis.
Yes. So how can you reverse symptoms of starvation?
Luckily, it has been shown that a lot of the symptoms of starvation syndrome are reversible. So with adequate food intake and weight gain, we can often see a resolution of these physical and psychological effects, or at least they reduce in intensity. So treatment often focuses firstly on that individual receiving adequate food intake to restore their body weight to healthier levels. And we often introduce the RAVES framework of regular eating, proposed by Shane Jeffrey, to facilitate this process. So eating regularly, that looks like your three meals, two to three snacks, adequate amounts of food, leaving you feeling satisfied, and having variety as well, being able to eat out. Also, spontaneous eating is something that's also talked about when we introduce this framework. So being able to, you know, eat more spontaneously and having that flexibility to be able to eat a variety of different things. We also introduce psychoeducation on starvation syndrome and its effects in attempts to enhance one's motivation to engage in regular eating and restore body weights to healthier levels. And therapy may also address any behaviors and cognitions that would interfere with weight gain, the weight gain process. So we may touch on laxative use, mealtime behavior like hiding food, excessive exercise.
Yes. So then why is the refeeding process so hard? What are some of the issues that you see in clinical practice?
So the refeeding process, it will often involve weight restoration because we're increasing the individual's energy intake so that it reflects, you know, what that individual needs for optimal functioning. And this can be really challenging for individuals, particularly those whose perception of weight and shape is distorted. Often we see reluctance from individuals to increase energy intake and body weight for the following reasons. Firstly, low self-esteem and restricting food intake and adherence to these strict, rigid food-related rules can provide that individual with a sense of achievement and success, thereby enhancing self-esteem and sense of sort of self-worth. So, the refeeding process can sometimes threaten that. Food restriction can be seen as rewarding for individuals due to their over-evaluation of body weight and shape and control over eating. Thirdly, distorted perception of body weight and shape. That individual may experience anxiety and distress around fear of the unknown and how their body shape may change in response to changing their energy intake. And they may also lack the strategies to assist with learning to accept their body shape and size. Fourth, regular eating may require these individuals to break their food rules. And this can be distressing for these individuals if adherence to these strict rules felt rewarding for them as well as emotionally regulating for them. And fifth, there may be a voice in the head of these individuals which drives them to continue to restrict. And in a sense, we're asking these individuals to engage in opposite action. So instead of restricting their intake, we want them to eat adequately to facilitate weight gain. And this can cause these individuals to feel a sense of, you know, they're conflicted and distressed. And this is why we often externalize this voice from the individual in the therapy setting. We may introduce this voice as the eating disorder voice, which is separate from their own, you know, healthy voice, from their own voice. And through this separation and process of distinction, it may help that individual to sort of manage these two paths or these two voices. You know, the voice that wants to nourish nourish them versus the eating disorder voice that wants them to restrict.
And you're also breaking long-standing habits as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So then what are the best ways people can approach this process?
Accessing the support of a team of mental health and medical professionals, as well as building a good support network of family, friends, and peers. From a therapist's point of view, a lot of therapists in this space may adopt a cognitive behavioral approach or a family-based approach depending on the individual's age. And the focus is regularly eating and addressing the factors that are interfering with weight gain, such as over-evaluation of weight and shape, low self-esteem, low sense of self-worth, low perception of functioning, poor interpersonal skills, you know, westernized thin ideals, adherence to body and food related rules, cognitive distortions, as well as perfectionism. So the over evaluation of, say, you know, achievement.
So then why is eating disorder recovery more than just about the food and getting back to a healthy weight?
Well, recovery from an eating disorder is often a lengthy process due to the multitude of factors that are maintaining the eating disorder pathology. I think it's important to flag also that not every eating disorder involves dietary restriction. So, for example, weight restoration is not the goal in treating, you know, say, binge eating disorder. So for these individuals, recovery involves weight restoration in addition to some of the following. Okay, so firstly, addressing, you know, interpersonal deficits and disputes if they are maintaining the eating disorder in some way, addressing clinical perfectionism, low self-esteem, low sense of self-worth. We can do this through strengthening the connection to self, enhancing self-compassionate dialogue and challenging this over-evaluation of achievement. Addressing distorted cognitive biases and distorted cognitive processing through thought challenging, thought reframing and cognitive restructuring, as well as addressing this preoccupation with shape and weight through minimizing body checking and avoidance and enhancing participation in other domains of daily living. So building a more sort of rounded sense of self that doesn't base their self-worth solely on what they look like.
So then why are some people addicted to the constant battle with starvation syndrome?
I think addiction, I mean, it's quite a strong word. I mean, for many individuals, they get caught up in this cycle due to the value they place on restricting their intake to the point of malnourishment and experiencing symptoms of starvation syndrome. They may overvalue having control over their food intake, when and how much they eat, for example, as it gives them this sense of achievement and reward, which in turn enhances their perception of self. They may also value restricting themselves, may serve as a form of punishment. And we do often see this, that individual may have adopted, you know, maladaptive core beliefs from childhood that they are not enough and they need to be punished. And one way to achieve this sense of punishment and infliction of harm is through hunger, deprivation, and food restriction. They may also feel unworthy of proper self-care and nutrition and may feel helpless about their capacity to care for themselves and give themselves adequate nutritional intake. And also, if they have been malnourished for a long time, it just becomes habitual and comfortable for them to be operating sort of at that level. And so increasing their food intake seems somewhat foreign and uncomfortable.
Yes. It is sad, though, that people do experience that and go through that.
Yeah. It's very sad. But, you know, they come to therapy and they're given the tools to really get on top of the things that they've been experiencing, and through that growth they develop so much resilience and courage. So it is an incredible journey, not only for the individual going through it, but also the practitioner supporting them.
So then why do some people not want to acknowledge that they are showing signs of starvation syndrome?
This could occur for a few reasons. So I guess many individuals, they do not necessarily have the cognitive capacity to realize they are experiencing starvation syndrome. So distorted cognitive processing around body image means that that individual may fail to perceive themselves as having a low weight. Lack of body awareness and interoceptive cues may also mean they struggle to see the impact of the starvation on their physiological, emotional, and cognitive functioning. Another reason, diet culture, which idolizes thinness, weight loss, and malnourishment. So many individuals do not perceive it as a problem. And also there is a lack of education around the physical and psychological consequences of starvation. So individuals in a malnourished state may not be aware of the detrimental impact it's having on their body, and thus they are not deterred from engaging in restrictive dieting. Or they may be experiencing symptoms, but they're not actually associating those with the dieting. And also, as flagged above, dietary restriction can be really rewarding for the individual engaging in it. Complying with the food-related rules often gives that individual this false sense of control and achievement. So some people don't want to kind of acknowledge the impact that the dieting is having on their physical, emotional, and cognitive functioning. Because of that sense of reward.
Yeah, and especially if you're a young person as well, you probably wouldn't have too much education around what's going on or what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
So then how can you best support a loved one who may be experiencing starvation syndrome?
Providing a safe, non-judgmental space where they can communicate their feelings and just feel validated, helping them then to access support from medical and mental health professionals. And for parents whose children are experiencing starvation syndrome, you know, they will likely be required to assist their child in the weight restoration process by preparing and supervising meals to ensure that their child receives adequate nutritional intake.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Harriet. It's always lovely having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.